Hello, everyone. Jesse here, and welcome to another episode of The Song of the Mountain, a podcast where we talk about the deep and profound ways that stories impact us and the kind of lives that those stories might be calling us to live. In this final episode of season one, I am going to talk to you about my Song of the Mountain, which is my vision to create a magical school called the Bifrost Academy. With that, let's jump in. Well, hello, everyone. Jesse Livingston here. And it is 11 o'clock at night. There's a full moon out. And I can still see the waves of the ocean from my little office window. We're in Florida right now, enjoying the amazing beaches in the Emerald Coast. And I think this is going to be the final episode of season one for The Song of the Mountain. It's been a pretty crazy ride creating this podcast. I've gotten to talk with some amazing people, and I have to say that's probably been the most rewarding part of doing this podcast was just getting to have conversations with people that I never would have otherwise. Talking to a children's book author and a relationship guru, Katie Hendricks, talking to educators and professional dungeon masters. My interview with Zach and Luis, and all of them were just amazing. And so for this episode, in keeping with the idea of the Song of the Mountain, I want to share with you what my Song of the Mountain, I think, is. About, I don't know, a year ago or so, I left my career in tech. I talked about this in the episode about me, so I won't reiterate all the details. If you want to know the details, you can listen to that episode. But when I left Netflix and decided to do some work with my career coach, one of the exercises that we did was called Stories from the Future. So the prompt goes something like this. John, my career coach, and by the way, his business is Liminal Space. John DeWall is his name, and he has a bunch of different liminal guides, they call it, kind of like career counselors. They're amazing. Definitely check them out if you're looking for something like that. John meets someone in a coffee shop. They strike up a conversation and realize that they both know me. And the person that John meets says, oh, wow, yeah, Jesse, like he had a really big impact on my life. And John says, oh, wow, okay, tell me how. And then I write the story that that person tells. And I did this four times, but the one that really stood out as being markedly different from the others is one that I want to read to you. And the reason I want to read it to you is because this is something that I've been avoiding ever since I wrote these words. It's something that I have not let myself pursue. It's something that I've said, this is not practical. You're never going to make any money doing this. You're never going to make a living doing this. Your vision's way too big. It's stupid. And I've spent so much time pouring contempt and fear on this vision. But in this time right now, I can't stop thinking about it. I'm at a time right now where I'm transitioning career-wise a bit more. I left some freelance user research work a ways back and having some trouble finding more. And now at a time where I'm trying to look for what's next and paying the bills and all that, I am now thinking of a vision for something that's not financially practical in any way, shape, or form. So I'm laughing that at this point is when I'm thinking about it. And I honestly don't know what to do with this. I understand this is a pretty big vision. At least I think it is. But the story is about something I'm calling the Bifrost Academy. This is told by a young man named Evan. Evan writes this. I live in the Mission with my mom and two brothers. My dad used to live with us, but left the house when I was about 9, so growing up without a dad was tough. My family and I pulled it together, though, and we made it through all right. When I was about 16, that's when the COVID pandemic hit, and it was pretty rough for us. My mother worked full time with us three boys at home because school wasn't meeting, and we all kind of nearly killed each other. We were so cooped up. There were fights, there was frustration, and most of our friends just stopped hanging out because their parents were so worried about us getting COVID. My brothers and I needed something to focus our energy on. We needed people to be around. We needed something. And that's when I came across Jesse's Academy. I was a total fantasy nerd for most of my life. I devoured Chronicles of Narnia, the Aragon series, Lord of the Rings. When I got older, the list goes on. I remember as a kid constantly imagining I was some kind of superhero with powers. I would watch the X-Men animated series and always pretend I was Gambit, throwing magic cards everywhere. But sooner or later, I had to get out of the fantasy and get back to the stupid real world. School, chores, homework, blah, blah, blah. All the boring stuff of life I always hated. But some part of me never wanted to leave the fantasy. I was criticized for always trying to escape. The church that we grew up in usually condemned fantasy as being too connected to the occult, or that fantasy was just escape from reality. This world was God's world. And I think deep down, that's why I never really believed the stuff I heard in church. The fantasy world seemed so much more appealing than memorizing Bible verses and earning fake money in my Awana program for kids, which for those of you who didn't grow up, this is Jesse talking. For those of you who didn't grow up in a Christian home, that's like a kid Bible program where you get like fake money and you can buy stuff with it. So anyway, so when I was walking around the neighborhood, I saw a flyer for Jesse's Academy and it immediately caught my eye. I still remember it. It had this incredible artwork of classic fantasy creatures all woven together. At the top, it said this: "Do you love fantasy? Do you miss hanging out with friends? Step into a magical world of adventure at the Bifrost Academy." As I read it further, it explained that it was a school that centered around playing Dungeons and Dragons, D&D for short. It involved all kinds of educational content like creative writing, acting, improvising, and even art and 3D modeling when we got into the character creation. But what was unique is it also included all the normal things you'd learn in school too, like history, science, math, and other subjects. But these subjects were all seamlessly integrated during the adventure. I wasn't sure how this would work, and I actually didn't even know what D&D was at this point, even though I've heard about it, but I was super intrigued. So I grabbed a flyer and I ran home to tell my mom. I burst through the door, flyer in hand, saying, "Mom, you have to let me do this. This looks so cool." She looked at the flyer and was immediately suspicious. My heart sank. She explained that D&D was evil and that it would introduce me to the occult. This is why I was never allowed to read Harry Potter. But after hours of pleading, she eventually yielded to trying it, if for no other reason than it was cheaper than all the other extracurricular activities she might let me do. I was thrilled. We signed up on the website, which made things super easy and clear. In fact, there were some thoughts about Christianity and D&D that spoke to some of my mom's concerns. In it, it explained that while there are areas of D&D that are similar practices to the occult, the role-playing wouldn't have us literally reenacting any kind of strange rituals. It allows each person to play out what they're most comfortable with. This was really new for my mom, which is partly what made her soften towards the Academy. The first session was in a few days, where we were just going to get an intro to the Academy and to D&D. What the Academy was about, the basics of role-playing, character creation, I could hardly wait. I couldn't explain it, but this felt like the start of something big. I'll never forget the first time we drove up to the Academy. It was in this incredible old Victorian house in the Mission with all the classic ornate filigree across the top. There were the so-called witch hat roofs, the spiked spire roofs, which made me feel like I was going into this amazing magical place. The sign to the Academy was written in ornate wooden letters: "The Bifrost Academy, the magic makes it real." When I walked in, it was like going into a fairy tale. The main room was large and inviting. There was a cozy fireplace with a marble sculpted mantelpiece and large, comfy-looking couches everywhere. There was this octagonal library, which actually had several hidden entrances. And it was in this very tall room with a ladder that you could spin around to get any books you want, like in, you know, Beauty and the Beast. Ornate stained glass windows let in a flood of multicolored light through every room. Right away, I could feel this place was different. These were the early days of the Academy, so it was just Jesse and a few other people running it. As we walked in, Jesse greeted us. "You must be Evan," he said with a warm smile.
"Welcome to the Bifrost Academy.
Let's get you settled in." We went through a few things, talked to my mom a bit, which made her feel even more comfortable as she got to know him. After we got all set up, my mom left and we walked into a new room in the house. This one was the coolest of all. It was a bit smaller than the others, but it had all this amazing fantasy artwork on the walls. The stained glass in this room was now of dragons and wizards and all kind of fantasy characters. The walls were lined with shelves covered in hundreds of amazing painted minifigures, various creatures and heroes. There was a desk in the far corner covered with maps and what looked like torn pages of parchment. I learned later that these were used during our D&D sessions. I was immediately struck by a large sign in the middle of the room. It was an ornate wooden sign with impressive details carved into the edges. The title was The Code. Later, Jesse explained to me that these were the five principles that guide everything we do at the Academy, and I can still recite them to this day. Number one, your life is an epic adventure. Two, sometimes you need to forget the, quote, real world to remember what's real. Number three, learning is better when you are on an adventure. Four, magic is all around you, but you need the eyes to see it. And number five, the real world is the world that makes you fully alive. In the middle of the room, there was this incredible hexagonal table that was custom made for this room and specifically for D&D. It was inlaid with runes and other fantasy references carved into the wood. I sometimes would just spend 5 minutes upon entering the room staring at it and running my fingers along the decorations. Three other kids were in the room along with Jesse. I sat down and we spent a little time just getting to know each other, but once we jumped in, everything changed. Jesse talked about our love for fantasy that people sometimes just don't understand. We talked about being labeled as nerds, which Jesse pointed out just basically means you care deeply about something that society has arbitrarily labeled as nerdy. He also talked about how the stories we read, watch, or create are like a bridge to a better reality than our lives now. These stories are how we dream of the people we want to be and the worlds we want to live in. And one of the most important things we're going to do at the Bifrost Academy is to listen deeply to those dreams. He explained how in Norse mythology, the Bifrost was this magical bridge between the realm of mortals, Midgard, and the realm of the gods, Asgard. That's what fantasy is, he said. These stories tap into realities that are all around us, but that we might not be experiencing. I know you all feel this, and that's why you get lost in your novels and your video games. I'm here to tell you that there is no greater adventure than the life you are living right now. But you just might not know it yet. But you will. Let's get started. I won't go into all the details of our session and the whole day, but we had a blast. All of us were a little awkward at first, but Jesse put us right at ease with the characters he played and the gentle promptings throughout the session. I couldn't believe what a wide range of emotions could be experienced during a session. There would be times we had side-splitting laughter because of some crazy impulsive thing one of us did, and other times incredibly sad because of some dramatic event in the story. It was really amazing. It was also crazy to me how seamless the learning content was throughout the whole adventure. Whenever I would learn about history or science or math, it just felt so arbitrary, so, well, kind of pointless. I would sit in the classroom with 30 other kids, copying down information so that I could get a good grade, so that I guess so I could get into college. it never really made sense to me. But I'll never forget the time where we were traveling through a dungeon and a friend of ours apparently was being held captive on the other side. And as we were trying to figure out the puzzle for how to get through the dungeon door, later on, Jesse asked us, did any of you realize that that was actually a calculus problem that you had to solve on the dungeon door? We all looked at each other in amazement, half of us feeling like maybe we got tricked and the other half feeling really happy that we didn't realize we were learning at the time. And that's when I remembered one of the Bifrost Academy principles, learning is better when you're on an adventure. I won't go over everything else. There's too many other details, but I'll just wrap up by saying this. As I look back on that time at the Bifrost Academy, it helped me realize that there were desires in me all the time in my whole life, but I just didn't have language to put to them. I realize now those experiences I mentioned earlier about watching X-Men, reading Lord of the Rings and such, there was this deep longing to experience more power, adventure, and meaning and the supernatural in my life now. I'm so grateful to Jesse for my time at the Bifrost Academy, and I know I'll carry these experiences with me for my whole life. End of story. So I wrote those words with a few minor updates as my thinking has changed a bit. When did I write this? I first wrote these words on April 13th, it looks like, in 2021. So here it is, more than a year later, and I still can't get away from that vision. The idea of creating a middle school, because this is what it would be for middle school and high school age students, terrifies me because my own middle school experience was so horrific. If you think back to your own middle school years, you may have had a similar experience. That's very common. I'm reading a book called Finding the Magic in Middle School by Chris Baum. I'm in the middle of it right now. It's fantastic. It doesn't sound like a book that anybody should read except if you have a middle schooler or you're a teacher. Everybody should read this book because if you've been a middle schooler, which is every single person listening to this podcast, you should read it because you've gone through potentially a lot of trauma as a middle school age student. One of the things he points out is neurologically, we have two big developmental phases in our lives. One is when we're very young, and the other is our middle school years. And the reason for that is it's in middle school that we become highly aware of what's going on around socially. We start noticing facial expressions on people that we didn't notice before. We become very attuned to groupings of people, who is excluded and who's not. Maria Montessori said that middle school is when the social individual is created. And she had this crazy idea that middle schoolers should just go work on a farm and just socialize the whole time. So the reason I say all of that is I know this has to be a middle school at the very least, if not a middle and a high school, because that's the age where all this magic comes out. This is the age where this kind of learning needs to happen. We need schools where instead of being shuffled into this big, ugly room with fluorescent lights and 30 other students and desks, and you copy down information from teacher at the front of the room so that you can get a good grade, but that you sit around, imagine you come into this room like Evan talks about, this amazing room full of artwork and imagination and creativity. And there's 4 to 6 other kids sitting around a table and you're looking at them eye to eye and you're role playing, you're going on this adventure with them and you're learning as you go. I went to public school my entire life and man, it did not work for me at all. And for most people that I knew, we need schools that tap into a child's imagination, that answer. So the three questions that the Finding the Magic in Middle School talks about that middle schoolers are asking is number one, who am I? Number two, how do I connect? Three, what will I contribute? And those questions might sound familiar to you if you're an adult, Because guess what? Those are the questions that you are asking yourself probably every single day. You might not know you're asking those questions, but somewhere in your subconscious, those three questions are reverberating all the time. This kind of learning, where you are creating a character and you're exploring, how does that character relate to my identity, to my real identity? Because part of what I do with, I do this with adults, and I've done it some with, actually I haven't done it with kids yet, but I'm working on it with a school in San Francisco, the Brightworks School. We're working on this program together, is model a magical fantasy character after your real abilities. How would you translate your real abilities into magical ones? And that is so that you can see yourself through the eyes of imagination, through the eyes of story language, of mythological language. And when you do that, you're inviting mythic meaning into your identity. So this process of creating this character and exploring your identity through a character, what an amazing way to explore that question, who am I? Then number two, how do I connect? Well, that's literally all you're doing in these sessions. You are connecting with the people around you. You are discussing what to do. You're debating plans. You're going into dangerous situations. You're doing so much. How do I connect? Whoa. Why did we never have a class on connecting with others? Think about that. In middle school, think of the classes you had. I'm going to bet top dollar that you never had a class called how to connect with others, how to resolve conflict, how to navigate hurt and rejection with your peers. Why are there no classes on that? Well, that is exactly what's going to happen in the Bifrost Academy, because you're sitting there with your teacher and he or she's going to say, hey, John, I noticed that you and Evan are not really getting along about this plan for how to get by the dragon. Like, he wants to do this and you want to do that. John, how are you feeling about that? Like, I'm noticing some frustration. Like, let's talk about this. That's what they're going to do, because they're going to be there in real time as these things are happening. Okay. How do I connect with others? And then finally, what will I contribute? We all long to contribute something of meaning in the world, something that is the natural outcropping of who we are and how we connect. And so when you create a character in D&D, one of the amazing parts about that is you get such a clear sense of what will you contribute. Let me give you an example. So let's say I'm the only one on the team that can heal the people around me. So when Evan gets roasted by the dragon's fire breath, what will I contribute? Oh, I'm the healer. I'm the only one that has healing spells that can heal Evan right now. And guess what? When that magic ability is connected to who you really are in the real world, whoa, whew. Now you have this sense of, man, that's what I'm going to contribute. I am going to speak healing words into this world. I can contribute words of encouragement, of healing, of empathy to people around me. That is one of my magic powers, you might say. And guess how you discover it? Through the magic of the role-playing game. Part of the reason I've been thinking about this so much is there are all these shows that keep coming out about magical schools. I remember when the School for Good and Evil came out, I was sort of mixed about the actual movie. The trailer was really cool. There's the Nevermore Academy in Wednesday. I'm loving that. And obviously, you know, the grandfather of all stories when it comes to our modern day obsession with magical schools is obviously the Harry Potter series. But every time I pick up a fantasy novel, every other one is about a magical school. Okay. And when I see a show or when I see a movie or read a book about a magical school, something happens to me. Something happened to me when I saw Wednesday Adams and her parents drive up to the Nevermore Academy through those metal gates and seeing this castle that they went to and the quad with this tree in the middle, and something, it happened to me where I just go, I have to build that school. I have to build a school that you walk into and you feel wonder. Guess when I never felt wonder? When I walked into my marble slab floor of my classroom in public school and sat on my plastic desk, I never felt inspired in that environment. I want to say this carefully because I love educators. If you're an educator, I love you. You are doing so much good in the world. Thank you for what you're doing. I really don't want any educator out there to feel like bad about their school. But I have to say, why are schools always so ugly? Like, why do we not prioritize aesthetics in school? So you'll notice in that story, half of what I talked about was the look of the school, was the beauty of the school. I describe it as this Victorian, but man, every other day or so, I look at castles for sale in the US. I'm not joking, people. I'm like, okay, like, what castle am I going to find some way of buying with no money to make this school? Because it's got to be a castle. Like, it's got to be Hogwarts. Like, you've got to drive, or better yet, take an amazing steam train through the woods and have it open up into this amazing castle-like building or Victorian building. And you go in and you just feel a sense of wonder. So in one of the early episodes, I talked about how stories are how we dream about the kind of people that we want to be and the world we want to live in. So when you look at the way we dream about school, what do you notice? One of the first things you notice is they're all beautiful. Like, they're amazing looking schools. They're always the castle. Why is that? Well, because we dream about school being a place of beauty. An educator friend of mine reminded me that the Reggio Emilia School of Thinking in Italy describes the environment as the third teacher. The environment teaches you things. Spaces change the way you think, the way you feel, the way you learn, the way you interact. The space is constantly feeding your subconscious. So what are the spaces we're learning in feeding us? Are they feeding us beauty? Are they feeding us inspiration? Are they feeding us wonder? My vision is that the Bifrost Academy, the space, would teach you wonder and imagination. The other thing we notice is there a lot of these schools in fantasy novels, obviously it is fantasy, but they're magical. They're schools for training you how to be magical. Take a very different example, Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. The same thing is these magical powers, these strange supernatural abilities are starting to come out of you, and you need a school to teach you how to wield them. What does that tell us? Well, it tells me two things. One is we hunger for the supernatural and the magical. We have a deep hunger for that. We've talked about that a lot in this first season of the podcast. But the other thing it tells me is we instinctively know that this time, the middle school and high school years, are a time of magic. Right? How old was Harry Potter when he started at Hogwarts? Harry Potter nerds, 12 years old. So when these middle schoolers are getting shuffled off the Hogwarts, or people are coming to Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters at about that age, why? Because that's when their magic and supernatural abilities all start to emerge. And guess what? That's reality. That's actually what's happening to us when we go through the middle school years. It's a time when all kinds of crazy, unpredictable ideas and feelings and abilities start coming out of you. Your body starts to change. Your body feels different every day. It is magic swirling around, but the problem is we don't know how to control it. We don't know what's going on. We have very few mentors oftentimes, or adult figures, that can help us navigate those times well. And so the Bifrost Academy, the reason why I want it to be some place of this blending of magic and reality is it mirrors what's really going on at that time. And when we can blend that experience of magic and reality, it gives us real language for what's going on inside of us and helps something of that imaginary world find their ways into our lives. I talk a lot about this, how for me, if the imaginary world just stays in my books and TV and video games, I'm left very unsatisfied. And that's why I want this academy to be this blend of the two. But the other reason, which I touched on in that story, for again, including the magical elements and imaginary elements in the learning, is that it actually creates better learning outcomes. You actually retain information better. And there's research on this, and my own experience speaks to this as well, that when you incorporate learning content in this imaginary world, we retain information better. We have this sort of increased motivation to learn, and it sort of brings a world of learning together into a cohesive experience rather than breaking things up into these bite-sized subjects. Mathematician Seymour Papert, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, he was really not a fan of the deconstruction of learning into these discrete subjects. And he says, quote, "What is worst about school curriculum is the fragmentation of knowledge into little pieces. This is supposed to make learning easy, but often ends up depriving knowledge of personal meaning and making it boring." So when you incorporate learning into an adventure where it has deep meaning to your character, so for example, let's say you create an adventure that is set in medieval Renaissance Italy, well, what if your character that you're playing has personal connections to actual historical figures in Renaissance Italy, but you build that into the imaginary adventure? So now you have a personal investment in knowing who these people are because it's connected to this adventure. But you're not just isolating history as the only thing you're learning. Let's say there's some kind of puzzle that's like chemistry-based, that the players have to kind of combine certain chemicals and certain compounds to release some magical spell or to break the lock on some door. You're integrating these all into one big experience. But all this also is done in a context of play, which if you're familiar with the great play researcher Stuart Brown, he observed that, quote, "The basis of human trust is established through play signals, and we begin to lose those signals culturally and otherwise as adults. That's a shame. I think we've got a lot of learning to do." He goes on to observe in his big TED talk he did many years ago that with no play, people become competitive, deceptive, fearful, and they hurt others and hurt themselves. That's why play is so crucial in our schools, because it primes us to be vulnerable with each other and develop that mutual trust. There's also evidence to suggest that this kind of learning that happens in fantasy environments actually improves children's ability to reason counterfactually. So here's a quote from Trends in Cognitive Science from 2014. And it says this, quote, "Research has found that children in playful or fantastical environments can learn and reason more effectively than children in didactic or realistic environments. Telling children to pretend or imagine a faraway planet bolsters their ability to reason counterfactually. Asking children to make judgments in the context of a fictional scenario leads to more accurate understanding of improbable events." End quote. I have a contact that I know through a Discord server who he did this with adults in the military, where he used D&D to help people in the military not get stuck in their problem-solving ability, to break them out of the normal modes of problem-solving. And as he said it, when you can't even depend on gravity to be there and function the way you want, you start thinking differently. So all of this, the play, the imagination, it all works together to build this fantastic learning environment. As a play test, I did this with my son. I'll tell you a little story about him. So he's 6. You heard him, hopefully, in one of the early episodes. I think it was episode 2, where he interviews me about my life. He is so far the first and only student of the Bifrost Academy. And it started with him hating learning his letters, how to learn the alphabet. Didn't like it at all. So one day I sat down with him, we had done this D&D adventure based on a setting called Humblewood. If you're not familiar with it, it's this setting, this imaginary setting where you're in the woods and you all play woodland creatures. And one of the parts of that world is the Avium, which is a magical school. Guess what? Another magical school that we love. And I said, okay, Liam, so you're sitting in the classroom in the Avium. What is your character going to be named? He's like, going to be Golden Claw. Okay, like, what does he look like? He's just improvised a character. I said, okay, a large, old-looking owl comes up in the front and says, good morning, class. I am Professor Sniggleworth. And of course, he laughed at that name. Today, you're going to be learning a few magical sigils. Now, these sigils are very powerful, but they will form all of the other magical spells and incantations that you will be able to cast here on after. So they are very important. So take your first one out and repeat after me. Ah. And he lifts up a page or like a scroll and it has the letter A written on it. And I say to Liam, hey, what do you do? And Liam says, I say he has, you know, like a scroll in front of him. So he picks up his scroll and says that. And I say, okay, as you say, ah, the outline of the letter on your page starts to glow with this green arcane light. And suddenly, whoop, an apple falls from the sky and whoop, hits you on the head and falls to the ground, which he laughs about. And then he goes on. We say B for B. And I say, okay, this little, and I'm improvising this the whole time. I'm like just making these things up. Let's say this little cloud of bees, this swarm of bees conjures out of thin air and it'll go wherever you want. What do you want it to do? And he says, I'm going to tell it to go over to those flowers and get some honey and get some nectar. I say, okay, so that the hive goes quickly over there and is eagerly enjoying the nectar from the flowers. So on and on we go through each letter of the alphabet like this. At some point, a giant bat like flies in through the window and he has to scramble to use his spells to fend off the bat. And from then on, he begged me every day to do a letter adventure. He was sad and disappointed every time we stopped. Why? Learning is better when you're on an adventure. Those scrolls could have been anything. They could have been advanced vocabulary. A door that you need to get through on the dungeon might have, again, some math problem to figure out. Like any puzzle in D&D is going to have some relationship to normal subjects that you might want. Let's say you're trying to teach a lesson on the Civil War. Set a campaign in the Civil War era, but with this like magical mirror world, some magical mirror element throughout the whole thing. Maybe there's some evil warlock that is behind slavery and he's poisoning all the minds of the people who own slaves and you have to take down that warlock to end slavery. Now, you know, history gets a little dicey because you're like, you're trying to teach what really happened and you don't know what's going to happen in D&D. But you get my point. You don't need to choose. You don't, if you're a parent, like you shouldn't need to choose between an innovative, robust, non-traditional, effective mode of education and learning normal academic content. A lot of my friends who are in schools or teach at schools that are like that are non-traditional. That's the big concern parents have is they're like, hey, is my kid learning the things that I feel like they should be learning? Okay. But my vision for the Bifrost Academy is that you shouldn't need to choose between the two. You can have both. But the other kind of mythic goal, if you might say that, is what I want for the academy is something that brings myth and story back in instead of what we see today, which is it's been exorcised. One of my professors in my applied mythology certificate program at the Pacifica School, Craig Chalquist, writes, in the United States, standardized tests, spirit-smothering competition, and fantasy-killing curricula looms over rows of students like the shadow of dark Saturn, paranoid eater of children. One of the tests is even called SAT. if you're not familiar with the Saturn myth, it's the myth of the god Saturn, and he gets a prophecy that one of his children will overthrow him. And in his paranoia, he devours all of his children until one of them overthrows him. The desire for power and control makes people and systems do terrible things. I want the Bifrost Academy to welcome myth and story back in so that the soul of the next generation of kids can be revived from what could potentially be a very soul-sucking educational experience otherwise. So, this is my song of the mountain. This is the song that's calling to me. And the bigness of the vision I have for this school feels massive to me. Did I add that I want this to potentially be a boarding school? Yeah, let's just throw one more thing into the pile here that's going to make it so much more easy to do. But I have to realize the other thing we notice about the schools and stories is they're always boarding schools. Did you notice that? Hogwarts, School of Magic, or School of Good and Evil, Nevermore Academy, go on and on. They're all boarding schools. Why? Because at middle school and high school, that's when you need out of the home. You need to develop out of the home and with peers. Chris Baum describes it as the brain of a middle schooler will view the parents as kind of in black and white, and your peers as in all the colors of the rainbow. That's how interested middle schoolers are in their peers. They are highly attuned to that. And so the development is out of the home. That doesn't mean they can't learn if they're not at a boarding school. I'm not trying to make some blanket statement about boarding school, especially middle school is very early to do that. So, you know, this is evolving. But again, I think there's a reason why all the magical schools we dream up in stories are boarding schools. They are these special places and environments that exist outside of the realm of the thing you've grown up in. They are the place where you start to break the curses of the past, where you start to become an adult. So I have a vision to, let's just go over how this sounds right now, to build a boarding school for middle and high school age students that takes place in an amazingly beautiful castle somewhere that uses a crazy, weird, new-ish mode of educating where you don't have any traditional classroom learning, pretty much. You learn most of what you're going to learn in these D&D groups. And of course, look, you can have, there's plenty of other things we can do besides that. But that is my big, audacious vision. And so if this vision inspires you, if this is something you're interested in, please reach out to me. I would love to find collaborators who are interested in helping bring this to life. My skill, I think, is in having these visions and trying to communicate them. But I need people to help me build that. And I just want to wrap up by saying this. Schools are in bad shape today. I was reading a couple articles. I've been reading a lot of articles recently on how are things at school. All of the backlash from COVID and all of the precautions and all the things that we decided to do with COVID left a pretty significant scar, emotional, social scar on schools and on school-age students. And for me, it kind of exposed just how deficient normal schooling actually is to deal with the social and emotional issues and learning that especially middle schoolers and high schoolers need. And so we need something new. We need something else. We need something where you actually stir up someone's creativity and imagination during school, not put it to one side or leave it in one class, but that imagination and creativity can be woven into every part of your learning. So thank you for listening. Thank you for those of you who have been along with me for this journey. I love you all. I'm going to be taking a bit of a break over the holidays, and we'll be back with season 2 in the new year. So with that, I'm Jesse Livingston, and I will see you next time.